From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. This is Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. My name is Matt.
And I am Ben.
And today, we're covering something pretty great. Something that we were a little trepidatious about early on when we were deciding to cover it, but we ended up just going out and doing it. And we even made a vlog. We made a vlog basically prefacing that it was going to be dangerous for us to make this episode. And so far, I mean, have you heard anything?
From our COA blog, we haven't heard anything from the Church of Scientology themselves, but we have heard from our audience, and you guys were saying, WTF, man, what's going on? Why aren't you talking more about Scientology? We want to hear more about it, and we might do that in the future, but we thought we could spend some time today looking into Operation Snow White, right?
Yeah, exactly. So this is kind of our little companion show with our, it's going to match up with our video episode on this subject. So, you know, maybe open a window with both at the same time. So we can reference the video and you can listen to the podcast. It's going to be this crazy experience for you. You're going to love it.
Well, as we're getting to Operation Snow White, Matt, if it's cool with you, I'd like to run through a real quick timeline of Scientology.
Okay, yeah, the history. Let's
Yeah, super high level. Okay, so around 1938 or so, L. Ron Hubbard, who later goes on to found Scientology, writes a manuscript called Excalibur. And according to most non-Scientology sources, so most people outside of the church objectively looking at this, Excalibur has some of the seeds that later grow into founding principles of Scientology. So 1949, he starts working on what will later become Dianetics. He publishes something there called Terra Incognita, the mind. He offers the findings or his conclusions to the American Medical Association, American Psychiatric Association. They're not as jazzed about it as he is. 1950, of course, he publishes his landmark Dianetics, Modern Science and Mental Health. And this Dianetics idea takes off pretty well, right? So he starts the Hubbard Dianetic Foundation of Wichita in the 50s. And then in May of 1952, he publicly announces the formal establishment of the philosophy of Scientology. And demonstrates, you know, what would later become the famous E meter. Mm-hmm. And now we have 1954, when the Church of Scientology is incorporated in California and Arizona. At the time, the IRS grants a tax exemption because, as we know, religious organizations in the United States are exempt from taxation.
Yeah. I would say there are probably a good number of people that might have a problem with that.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Yeah, I'm one of them too.
Okay, well, at least we're being honest with everybody about it. So we could spend a lot of time in the early history of Scientology, which you and I both find fascinating.
Which, by the way, has nothing to do with the film The Master. That should just be a caveat there.
Yeah, that is just a study of how manipulation occurs.
That's right, exactly. By a guy that has no similarities whatsoever to Mr. L. Ron Hubbard.
A lot of people write science fiction and go on to establish religions.
That's, yeah, so many.
Several. Well, the guy, the master, for sure.
Yeah, that guy did.
Okay, so let's go to the meat of the problem. Operation Snow White. Now, Operation Snow White is a real thing that did happen according to the United States court system. And this was really interesting in our episode, right? Because you saw there's a Scientology Myths website run by a pro-Scientology group, and they say that this whole thing was kind of exaggerated and blown out of proportion, didn't actually happen. But the nuts and bolts of it are this. 11 senior people in what was called the Guardian Office of the Church were convicted of obstructing justice, so stopping an investigation, burglarizing government offices, stealing documents and government property. And they were found guilty. They were convicted. Yeah. There's no other way around it, right?
5 years in prison for those guys.
So,
and lady. Yeah. And is there only one woman? Was it just L. Ron Hubbard's wife?
Mary Sue Hubbard, yeah. Or Mary Sue, at least. Mm. But L. Ron Hubbard himself was not convicted. The Operation Snow White stands as the single largest proven infiltration of the U.S. government, right?
Yeah, which, and it is referred to as the Snow White program internally in Scientology. So if you ever hear that, that's the same thing that we're talking about here.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it comes down to, and in a lot of ways, both groups, both the U.S. government and legal system of the country and Scientology organization are putting their own narrative on this, right? And so according to the Church of Scientology, these people in the Guardian's office were acting of their own accord. The idea of the Snow White program, as laid out by Hubbard, was to correct misinformation.
Yes, and to do it by legal means. At least that's what he stated.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Because according to the people who are more on the pro-Scientology side mm-hmm. of this, Operation Snow White, this idea of infiltrating the U.S. government to steal IRS forms, among other things, was total BS. Didn't exist. Mythological. But the Snow White program, which Hubbard talked about, was completely legal. But the question here is, was it really legally correcting a number of, hear my air quotes here, everybody, mm-hmm. false governmental reports about the church, its leaders, and its members?
Yeah, or were they just reports that they didn't like, per se?
Right. And what was the level of persecution? Because the other idea is that I feel like it's a bit of an argument of semantics. Snow White program versus Operation Snow White mm-hmm. and the accusation that critics of the Church of Scientology purposefully misinform people or spread disinformation about this. The thing is that when Hubbard wrote the Snow White program, like, let's just say the Church of Scientology's views on this are, for the sake of argument, let's go with that. So we know that he wrote it in 1973, and that the Apollo, the ship that he was staying on, was meeting hostility in European harbors because of the accusations against the Church of Scientology by former members, by governmental agencies across U.S. and Europe, or in the United States and Europe. So this led to some crazy things happening, and there might be a little bit to the idea of an intentional act of persecution against the Church of Scientology, because this rumor started spreading in 1973 that the Apollo was a CIA ship, that it was somehow associated with the world's favorite clandestine services. And
I wonder who spread that rumor.
Well, it turns out that a State Department telex, right? You heard about this? Mm-hmm. A State Department telex was sent around in, what, 72?
I believe so, yeah. And, you know, you make waves when that kind of statement comes out, literally, in the ocean.
Right, and so we know that there is some evidence that the State Department really did have some sort of problem with Hubbard and was using some slightly less than ethical means to persecute the guy on his Sea Org boat.
So one of the things we didn't talk about too much are the methods used by some of the people involved in the Operation Snow White. Like, how did they actually get these files?
Uh-huh.
And there are a couple different ways that they did this. And I'm getting this information from an interview that was conducted with Mike McLaughlin. He was an OSA officer.
Okay.
That's the Office of Special Affairs. And he said they use a couple of methods. One of them was this thing called a suitable guise, G-U-I-S-E. And this is the idea that you just make letterhead, perhaps, of a false company or a news agency, and you send a letter out to some other agencies, say the DEA, and you ask for certain documents because you're going to make a film. In particular, he talks about how one of his people said they were going to be making an anti-Scientology movie, and could we please get all of these files that you have on record of them so that we can use it in our movie? And that's one way they would do it. Another way they would do it would be to literally break into a building, like the, what the heck was it? Yeah, this is the DEA's office that he's talking about in this interview, where he had his right-hand man go in and unlock the women's bathroom window so that he could come in and use a lockpick to get into the filing cabinet and then copy all the files. I found that really interesting. And I think that right there is where you start getting into the illegal stuff, because it's not illegal to, well, I don't know if it is illegal or not to, create a ruse to get some documents.
Oh, well, it, I think it becomes fraud at that point. It yeah. can be, because it's, intentionally pretending or purporting to be someone different. But, those are really good points. I guess you could always say at, if someone does try to prosecute you for it, you could always say, "Your Honor, it was satirical."
It was satire. That's pretty great.
One of the things that we should say about the Operation Snow White, or excuse me, cough, cough, the Snow White program, is I'll go ahead and, for in the sake of fairness, read the official statement from Scientology Myths. How about that? "The Snow White program is not being executed today. It was a very specific program for a special state of affairs at the time it was written. The Church of Scientology, however, continues to use the Freedom of Information Act and similar laws all over the world to defend its right of non-discrimination and freedom for all." So, you know, that's clearly a statement marketed toward the public, and that's their specific position. In the case of the United States versus Hubbard, the legal system of the U.S. did find that there was an active conspiracy, and this has been distressing to people. One thing I wanted to ask you about this, Matt, that we never really got a chance to talk about, is earlier we said this was the largest proven infiltration of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there could be another one?
Oh, yeah, dude. The Red Scare and all that? Come on, man. That was a huge infiltration of the U.S.
How much
commies are everywhere?
Now, we do know that there were communist forces in the U.S. at the time.
Yeah, actually, there really were.
I mean, McCarthy was crazy, but he also had some good points there. So you think that if there were a larger infiltration of the government, that it would be from a foreign power like
the most likely culprit.
Well, what do you think about the idea that the largest infiltration of government is by banking?
As in a central bank that is in no way affiliated with the U.S. government?
Or as in a private banking concern? You know, the idea that one of the larger banks, like maybe J.P. Morgan or something, would be able to infiltrate the U.S. government. And when we define infiltrate, we're saying by not necessarily burglarize somebody's office so much as sway the decisions or write the laws.
Or getting people who work for them then to work for the government, you mean? Kind of like a, I don't know, sliding the, what is the phrase? The rotating.
Some sort of door that revolves.
Yeah, the revolving door. Yeah. I mean, which is a real thing that exists. And once you're done with Congress, you can go work for any number of large banking institutions or, you know. There's so many jobs you can get after being a congressman or a senator.
Yeah, the job security post politics is pretty good as long as you toe the party lines. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of things you can never go on record saying, right?
Yeah, and I wonder, I don't have any statistics, but I wonder if it works the other way around just as easily. Like
if you can go from private to political?
Yeah.
Why would you want to?
I don't know, but I guess to change the rules.
Hey, right? It's a good question.
To stop the rules.
Yeah, it's a good question. So that's speculation on our part.
Yeah, sorry.
we're talking, you know, I like that we both had two big guesses, right? And we received some emails from some other people or, YouTube comments, Facebook comments and stuff about the other infiltration possibilities, and they ran the gamut. We had a couple people that popped up every time, you know, corporate infiltration popped up, the idea of communist infiltration popped up, and a few others. But it made me think that we should really cover infiltration in our show, on our video show, and that's what we're doing. But before we go out, Matt, do you want to do some listener mail?
I do. All right, here is some listener mail we got from Tom N., Ben. It says, Dear, I guess stuff they don't want you to know.
That's us.
Longtime subscriber, first-time writer. Have you guys ever delved into any of these? Mysterious object blocking the Highway 99 drill?
Huh.
The Baigong pipes?
Oh, okay.
The Great Attractor or Gravitational Anomaly? And also DMT and Mother Beings. Loyal fan, Tom N. Okay, now, I don't know several of these. I've never even heard of the Highway 99 drill. I guess that was a thing. Or the Baigong pipes?
The Baigong pipes, I know, are a mysterious set of artifacts that are going into, that extend from the ground. They're in China.
That are supposed to be, they can't figure out how they were made at the time, I guess.
I think, yeah, they've got a couple questions. How were they made? Why were they made? You know, were they vents for something underground? And the areas that they lead to are too small for a person. So
is it
an ancient, it's probably an ancient technology of some sort, but we're not sure what. Now, as for the great attractor, the anomaly, that's something that you and I haven't explored any more than this thing on Highway 99. But DMT, my friend.
Oh, yes.
We have an episode just about DMT.
Yeah, and it's actually coming out. I'm not exactly sure when this publishes, but it's going to be out hopefully by the time
you hear this episode.
It'll be on our channel on YouTube.com/conspiracy stuff and also on iTunes.
Yep. And we're also on Facebook and Twitter as Conspiracy Stuff. We need to ask for help from you. Now, we're just getting started with this show. We're trying out a couple different things. You know, we've had shorter episodes, longer episodes, stuff like that. If you are listening to this via iTunes, why don't do us a solid, make our year for us and go to iTunes and just give us a nice rating there. Be charitable. It'll be your good deed. And, you know, just give us 4 or 5 stars or whatever. And then later when someone says, hey, can I borrow some money? Or, hey, will you give me your car or whatever? You can say, no can do, Jose Canseco. I already did my good deed for the day.
Sorry, I don't even know what to say. Jose Canseco.
I don't know. I don't know. All right, so we're going to get out of here. Thank you guys so much for checking out the show. Please do send us an email. Let us know what you would like to hear in an upcoming episode. Our address is
conspiracy@discovery.com.
For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit testtube.com/conspiracy stuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracystuff.